accession number 233-62, reel 3.
Elaine Cheverton, Reel 3. Yes, very interesting. You actually saw Mountbatten, did you?
Yes.
This pep talk.
Yes, we were standing there, part of the... We happened to be visiting the... there were two of us, I suppose. I'm not sure that it wasn't... Jimmy Lane was the other one.
Who was Jimmy Lane?
Dunlop. The one that you... Mrs. Dunlop, Mrs. Lane she is now, but Jacqueline Dunlop she was then. Mm. And we were there when it happened, and you know, one realised how very much they felt the Forgotten Army, and how low the morale was, and that somebody like that, who obviously had influence, who could get Churchill to provide more, you know, to bring it to the attention of the British government and what conditions they were in. And it was Mountbatten who said there was the monsoons, of course, were terrible, and that there was the sort of understanding that fighting would stop in the monsoons, and of course the Japanese were much more better equipped for dealing with fighting in the jungle, whereas we took a tank in and it got bogged down and that was it, you know. And Mountbatten said, and there will be no monsoon this year. Well, the war would go on. So he was a great boost for their morale. And things like letters and things began to come through more frequently.
So you were in Imphal before the siege, obviously.
Yes.
Yes. Were you there for a long time? Were you in and out of the area?
I think it was March. It was March, because it was St. Patrick's Day, wasn't it, that we were evacuated. It must have been... I suppose I was there for about 4 or 5 months. Mm.
And whereabouts were you? Were you based in Imphal?
In Imphal, yes. And we had this... I think it was a house that had been taken over. And I can't quite remember now whether it was a house or whether it was a basha. But it was quite sort of adequate. And... I was out again, I think, with Jimmy Dunlop, and the things were, I mean, you know, we knew that the Japs were getting nearer, and we were serving group. We might be serving things, people like gun sight, people on gun sights, but we'd also be where it would be a brigade or something, and they'd line up and to get their buy whatever they were wanting. But on this occasion, a motorcyclist came up and said we were wanted back at, I suppose we were about 20 miles away, back at headquarters straight away, and that we were being evacuated. And that was when the Japs were making a very rapid advance, and they were afraid of cutting off the one road that went up to Imphal. And so we just had to collect our things. So it was a house that we were in, I think. We had to just pack our things up, and I'd got a bit of a garden going, trying to grow some vegetables to say goodbye to that. But it was a very scary time, because we knew that Imphal was going to be defended, and we knew, of course, a lot of the people who stayed behind, and they evacuated all the non-essential people, and it was a long journey down, because they didn't stop till we got to Dimapur.
I expect by then you knew the reputation of the Japanese as well, did you?
There was a story which I don't really believe, because we had each lorry had each truck had the driver and an officer who was in charge of us, and we would be sort of five or six in the back of the truck. And we were told that the officers who were in charge of the truck were told if there was a question of us falling into the hands of the Japanese that they should shoot us first. But I don't really think that. I think that that's a bit one could leave out, because I'm quite sure it wasn't true. But that was the feeling that the women shouldn't fall into the hands of the Japanese.
Yeah, that must have been quite a frightening experience, was it? That evacuation.
Yes, it was, because we didn't really. Nobody tell us. We were then, I think, perhaps put back into our role of women and mustn't be frightened. You know. The young men themselves didn't know either. Really, they were just told that they got to get us down to Dimapur. So we didn't know what was going on, but we knew it was very urgent, and that there was the danger of the Japs breaking through and invading India. So that it was not only a frightening and worrying experience in itself, but one's family and for the rest of what was going to happen.
Yes, and I suppose leaving the young, the defenders. You knew a lot of them,
yes.
When you were back in Dimapur, was that a very crowded place because of the evacuation?
It was very crowded and very hot and steamy. The humidity was terrible, and it was really a very uncomfortable place to be. I wasn't there for very long, not more than a few weeks. And then I think, was that when I went to Akyab? Where did I go from there? I can't remember where I was. I certainly was in Akyab, and I think I went back to Shillong for a little bit. And then I can't think of anywhere in between. Then I think I was posted to Akyab. Mm.
I suppose this would have been quite an unsettled time with the Japanese advance. The army hadn't gone into Burma at this stage, had it? On the Wasbis certainly, it would have been the defence of Kohima and Imphal,
yes,
is that right?
Yes.
And in 44.
Oh yes, of course. After that was Kohima.
Yes.
I was in. Oh dear, I can't remember the name of it now. Yes, that's right. On the route halfway up to Kohima. I can't remember the name of it. It was just a little place, but it was there were British troops or troops there. Yes, that's right. And that was when I got to know about the Kohima bits of the people.
What did you know about the Kohima? This was the siege time, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. Mm. We knew that there was these terrific battles going on. I think we didn't get. One's information was always way behind, because there wasn't much in the way of communication, or certainly, and nobody would be sort of letting us know what was happening. We did know, and people used to drop in the evenings and sort of have a drink and. And they were worried, but they were trying to keep it from us, that there was a very real danger.
And Would you have been serving on this, you know, staging post to Kohima?
Yes.
Would have been serving with your canteens?
Yes,
would
that's
you?
Right, yes. They were rather hilly, windy roads. Quite not very good for the canteen. You know, they were not easy places to get to.
Were there many wounded coming out of Imphal and Kohima?
I don't think there were many wounded, but I think the box at Imphal held and there wasn't very much in the way of casualties there, but Kohima... I think the people who were being evacuated from Kohima were evacuated straight down. I don't think we didn't. It was only local troops that we were providing. I wish I could remember the name of it. Well, perhaps it was Dimapur. Perhaps I stayed in Dimapur and didn't go to Shillong later. I think I probably stayed in Dimapur.
Did you return to these areas after the sieges, after the battles?
No, didn't go back to Imphal. No.
You must have got a pretty good idea of the sort of nature of the terrain around Imphal. Was it, what sort of place was it?
Well, it was very sort of hilly and rocky. And a lot of forest, really. It was a lot of trees around. It would be very difficult terrain, and where the Japanese, of course, had a much better advantage than we did. I mean, we were learning late that the heavy equipment was no good and that small units with light equipment were better. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think at what stage, because I was involved when they were flying in the people going behind the lines.
The Chindits?
Chindits, yes.
Were you? And
I'm trying to think, was it? I think it was Dimapur from the airstrip.
You saw that, did you?
Yes, and we were serving them just before they went. And there was a thing when the first aeroplane took off, all our notes blew away from our cash box. We had to rush around. That was a sport, yes. And that was one of the occasions where I think we very much justified our role, because these were people who were knew that they were going off to a very dangerous and unknown situation. And having sort of a table set out with cake and tea and women serving it was very important to them as a sort of something that took their minds off. It was something that was normal and sort of saying that life could be safe and normal again once they'd come through it.
That was by the airstrip, was
yes.
it, where they were taken off?
Yes. Mm.
Would these have been in gliders? Would it have been gliders or engine planes?
I think it was the engine planes taking the gliders up, probably. Or whether they picked the gliders up at some other airstrip, but it was a large airstrip. I think it was when we were there, they doctored all the mules voice boxes so that they couldn't eeyore and give the game away to the Japanese. So they had a lot of these mules there, and a mule had broken its leg or something, had to be put down, but it was perfectly healthy. And the vet came, must have been the senior person at that stage, and said, "It's perfectly okay, would you like some liver?" But it's mule's liver, but it, you know. So I said, well, yes, that would be marvellous, because it was fresh meat. And I didn't say, I just said it was, I didn't say to the others that it was mule's liver, but it was an important bit of something to eat, you know, something. And I didn't tell them until afterwards. Nobody was too fussed about it. We can do anything.
It's interesting. They interfered with their
They removed their voice boxes so that they couldn't whinny. They couldn't eeyore. And
these were the people going behind the lines,
yes,
the chindits.
Yes.
Were they very different sort of men to the other troops, did you think, the chindits?
I think they were very quiet and reserved because they were, you know, heading up to go on a dangerous mission and nobody quite knew what it was going to be like.
Would you have seen Wingate with them?
I didn't actually know, but he would have been around somewhere, yes.
Yes. Was there much talk about Wingate and the chindits, do you know?
Well, it was supposed to be kept secret, you see, so there wasn't really.
But you knew who they were?
We knew they were going behind the lines, yes. I think...
Could I ask you about the other places you visited, you know, in your WASBE work?
After Milestone 82, I was posted to Cox's Bazaar, which was on the outskirts of a small town. I think there were troops around, but not actually in the town. And we were in a house that had been commandeered. And while we were there, Lady Mountbatten was doing a tour of the troops in the area, and they thought it would be nice if she came to us for lunch, you know, women, and we could give her somewhere to tidy up and have it. Oh. And somebody brought her in a jeep, and I was introducing her to the rest of the team. And I was so nervous that I couldn't remember any of their surnames. So I was just making names up as I went along, you know. This is Jenny Jones and so on. And the sort of look of astonishment of each person as they were introduced wrongly. And she was very easy. And, you know, she was doing a lot of touring around, so she knew about the area. And I don't know how long I was there for, but not all that long, I don't think. And then...
This would have been during the advance, would it? You know,
It must have been, I think, because I'm trying to fit in. There was somewhere where we were on the edge of an airstrip, and the Japanese planes used to come over bombing at night, and we didn't... I can't remember where that was. It was in the book, I think. But we had this... We were in a commandeered house.
Yes, would that have been in Akyab when you were bombed? I know there was bombing
That's it, because it's an island. Yes, that's right. And we had the naval ships out at sea. Yes, thank you. I couldn't quite place it. That was where I went to after Cox's Bazaar, which doesn't... Nothing very... Other than Lady Mountbatten's visit, nothing very significant remains in my mind.
But you would have been going out on your visits with
the
canteen,
would you? Yes, we were still doing visits. We didn't do static canteens until later. Yes, Akyab was quite a dicey experience, really, because... It was this island which was more or less an arsenal. They'd got great piles of shells and ammunition and so on under tarpaulins, and there was an airstrip. And we had an air force. There was some Spitfires, but of course they couldn't fly at night. And the Japs would come around regularly bombing. At night we had a slit trench, and I had a bit of shrapnel, I think I've thrown it away, that was sort of fell just outside the entrance to the slit trench. And the RAF, of course, were absolutely hands tied because they couldn't do anything about this retaliation. And if there had been, where we were, we could see the bomb doors opening as it flew over, because we were on the edge of the airstrip, and you could see the lights in the belly of the aircraft as the bomb doors or whatever came over. You could see a light going on. I don't know, were the bombs away, perhaps they had, I don't know. Anyway, we could feel very close to being blown up. And if there'd been a lot of hits on the island, of course all of the ammunition would have exploded and gone up. And we had naval ships off the harbour, but off the coast, but they couldn't do anything very much either. The Japs had it all their own way at night.
Well, was the ordnance, would that have been well camouflaged, did you know?
Well, they just had it covered with tarpaulins, green tarpaulins, I think. I don't remember them camouflaging them.
And were you manning static canteens there?
No, I think... Yes, I think we must have been. Because it was only a small area that at one end of the island that the troops were. So I think, I don't remember where we would have had it. Perhaps we did still go around with the canteen rather than find a static place.
How would you have coped for supplies in a situation like that? Could you have got, you know, reserves up of your cigarettes and, you know, various foods and tea that you were serving? How did that system work?
I don't remember any difficulty with it, so they must have come in with... There would have been a canteen supply depot that we would have drawn them from, and presumably that didn't have too much difficulty in being stocked up.
And would there have been a team of you there?
Yes, there were a team of five of us, I think.
And your living conditions, what were they like in that situation?
It wasn't too bad. It was a commandeered house. I mean, basic, because we just had camp beds and nothing, and canvas baths and things, and the same sort of system of heating bath water in a kerosene, empty kerosene tin rather than any laid on water. Well, perhaps we did have, I don't remember whether we had, no, we didn't have flush toilets there, because I remember we had these, you dig a trench and have the box over it. And we had, we'd put some parachute silk, there was lots of this, where parachutes had been dropped, and there were lots of these parachutes sort of not whatever you wanted to use them. In fact, we made knickers out of them. And we made a sort of, round the loo area. And when the next morning somebody had pinched off, so the loos were open to the world. So we sort of did a cavey system until we got some more parachutes out.
Did you ever have guards? Was it necessary to have guards on your accommodation?
No, we did. We did in Rangoon. We had Gurkha guard one at a time.
Just but not in the field.
No, we never needed it.
Did you ever feel unsafe from any,
never.
Sexual advances from men?
No, never. It was amazing, really, looking back. We went around in a group, we would be in a sort of formal invitation from the sergeant's mess or the officer's mess or whatever, and we'd go and go back again. And when we were in Rangoon, we met Groucho Marx. He was the only one who kissed me. I didn't appreciate it particularly. As he was saying goodbye, he gave me a great big hug and kissed me. He was with the American entertainment group. But we never had any feeling of that. But we did in Rangoon. We had somebody on guard, but in the evenings. But I never really. There wasn't this, you know, a feeling of. I mean, it would have been, I suppose, perfectly easy. We were in tents or barshas or open houses, and I don't suppose anybody had a key. But we never worried about it, and it didn't happen.
Did your health hold up? You know, you were saying with the vitamin deficiency that you had skin conditions. You know, did you manage to keep well?
Yes, I think on the whole I don't remember there being much sickness. We did it sort of halfway through the campaign, get put on Mepocrin, this anti-malaria thing, which made us all yellow. I can remember that must have been Akiab again's swimming in the sea and popping my foot up and thinking, gosh, there's a Japanese about, you know. Because it was a very severe penalty if you didn't take it. And, of course, you could tell that people were or weren't taking it because people weren't yellow.
And but was the bombing only at night?
Yes, it was at night they came over.
And was that pretty regular?
Fair as I remember it, yes. And we were, you know, we thought it was pretty awful. And the young men, of course, were busy sort of making jokes about it and sort of, you know, behaving as though nobody was very worried about this. And I can remember thinking, oh dear, well, the fact that I'm frightened of what's going to happen tonight is because I'm a woman. Until there was one young man who said, oh, he said, they just fly up and down my slit trench. I'm expecting them to drop bombs on it at any moment. And I thought, well, that's a bit more human. No, it was a nasty. I don't know how long it went on for.
Did they actually get any of the ammunition?
Amazingly, no. They made great holes in the air strip, which had to be filled up each day, but I expect they were also wanting to get after the Spitfires, but they were must have been well camouflaged and dotted around the island.
And so they flew in the daytime, did they?
They flew in the daytime, and they were trying to find, I suppose, where the bombing came from. But I don't know what radius they could cover.
Did you have much to do with the American Air Force as well?
We did it at one place where the American Air Force were flying over the hump and dropping stores to Stillwell, I suppose. And we went and visited them, but not, and, you know, just as a sort of courtesy visit rather than providing any canteen. They were much better supplied with, and they had chicken and ice cream flown over from the States for their troops. And there was a lot of feeling amongst our troops that they were, the Americans were being mollycoddled and spoilt and weren't really soldiers. I think there was a feeling that, you know, they didn't really behave in the way that British soldiers would have done, you know. And if they were told to fall in, they'd sort of be smoking a cigarette until the last moment and so on, you know. It was just a different way of looking at things, and probably in one way quite a sensible way, but it was not the way that British Army was expected to behave. So there was a lot of feeling, and they did get better supplies and better, you know, beer issue and so on. They did better than our people.
How about the tribes people? Did you ever meet them? You know, one hears of the Burmese in particular, the tribes people, and or up in the northern Assam, the Naga Hills.
Yes, the Naga Hills.
Yes. Did you ever know anything about them?
Well, we knew that they were on our side, that they would give information when the Japs were moving and so on, and risked a lot. Because if the Japs suspected anybody in any of the Naga villages, you know, they They killed them and destroyed the houses and things. So, but they were very pro our side of the war rather than the Japanese. And the people in the bazaar in Imphal were the Naga. People in the bazaars were very welcoming and made a great fuss of us.
You were saying it wasn't the done thing to buy food from the local people, is that right?
Yes, I mean the army couldn't